All right. Welcome back to the Two Dudes Talking Motorcycle Podcast. My name is Mitch.
And I am Gleb.
You can find us on our socials at tdtmotorcycles@gmail.com and Instagram tdtmotorcycles.
And you can find me on Instagram at GlebLapham.
Oh, yeah. And I am Meech City Beach on there. So it's always the same. But today we are going to be talking about some pretty cool motorcycles, new ones.
Yes.
Well, new to us ones. And we also will be discussing bringing your bike out of winter storage or getting it ready for the riding season once again.
Yeah. And if you live in a state where you can ride the year around, congratulations.
We hate you.
Good for you. Must be nice.
Yeah, right. So, but anyway, but first, the bikes. Gleb.
The bikes. So we got a chance to try out the brand new Triumph Speed 400. So our local dealership had a demo of that available. And there's a few episodes ago where we talked about the Speed 400 and the Scrambler 400 that Triumph released. Mm-hmm. They're Triumph's new entry-level bikes. And we were kind of curious to, you know, try them out just because they were very, they have a very accessible price. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they still look like your classic Triumph bike.
Yeah.
And then after that, we also got to try out, and this is so exciting because this is a bike that I've been wanting to try out for the longest time. And that was the Ducati Panigale V4S.
Yes.
Ducati's like premier super sport super bike
that you can buy.
And that thing is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
So
you got to ride it first.
Before let's talk about the Speed 400.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Okay. That's what I mean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the Speed Twin, before we get any specs or anything, initial impressions, like what did you think?
Honestly, I liked it. And, hold on. I just remembered we had an email from one of the listeners, before we jump in the topic. It was from Ryan. Ryan sent us a little correction. I think I was the one that may have said this by mistake.
Oh.
But he corrected me on chain drive versus like shaft drive. I think in the previous episode I mentioned that the shaft drive is like more efficient and things like that, but it's not. That was my bad. I don't know if I heard that or read that somewhere or misread at one point, just kind of like forgot about it. But the chain drive is the most efficient for getting the power from the engine to the wheel.
Yeah.
However, the shaft drive is still, you know, the easiest one to keep maintained and mm-hmm. stuff because you don't have to clean it
right.
or anything like that.
Yeah. And so it'd be good for like your long distance touring if you're going to have a mile eater. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get that out of the way. Ryan, thank you so much for shooting us an email. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for that correction. And if you ever catch us making a mistake, you know, feel free to.
Please do.
Yeah. Please let us know. We try to do our research and
we do our best,
know our stuff, but sometimes you know we tend to mess up.
If we mess up, we want to make sure we get the correction out to everybody.
So definitely.
And there was also Don, thank you for your kind words about the episode and everything from there.
I'm glad you liked listening to our
it's cool that he's got that 87 Goldwing still going.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, those
Hondas, man.
Sweet. Just never dying engine.
Yeah. Thanks again for that.
Yeah.
For everything. We really do like your emails.
Yeah. That's still my favorite part of this.
Same.
Is getting emails from our listeners.
I look every morning.
Yeah.
Anybody?
But back to the topic at hand. So the Triumph Speed 400.
The
Speed 400. This is Triumph's entry level motorcycle, and it starts at just over $5,000, mm-hmm. I believe. And which I think is, one, a phenomenal entry-level
price. That's a
price.
Very good price for a small bike.
That's a very good entry-level price. And for that price, I really like the fact that it comes with like traction control, mm-hmm. comes with ABS. It even comes with two riding modes. I believe it's road and rain. So the rain mode, I mean, I don't use mine too often, but I think it's great if it's raining. But two, if you're a new rider, I think rain mode is one of those things
it's more controllable.
Yeah. It kind of dulls the throttle response a little bit so you don't like accidentally have your bike flying out from underneath you.
Like when I was new to my bike, I started out on rain mode because it was my first bike that was, you know, bigger than a 500.
Yeah.
So I was
I think
nervous.
I did the same with mine when I first got it.
So it's a good peace of mind.
Yeah. So I really like the fact that it has some riding modes. It's got throttle by wire, so helps with or has the traction control and stuff like that. And I think those are kind of those things. And I think we had an episode on this kind of a while back talking about how you know, it's like a lot of these things, like some people, you know, aren't fans of like electronics and these things they feel like intrude on their riding experience and stuff. But I think a lot of these things are nice for, especially for new riders, is because then, you know, you're kind of still learning. You're still not like 100% sure like how to react in like a situation where if you have bad traction or no traction and stuff. So it's nice to have those assists from the bike to kind of help you out. I mean, they won't, obviously they won't like save you if it's really bad, but they can at least mitigate some things in case you,
it's like, they mitigate, like you said, like they won't make you a better rider. You have to do that. But these are good, like little ways to kind of help like with the uncontrollable.
Yeah. So exactly. Yeah. And just the amount, like I'm looking on Triumph's website here, just about the stuff that they have included on those bikes. They even have a USB-C port by the handlebar so you can charge it.
BMW. What?
Like USB-C, LED, LED headlight. They have a little LCD screen. It's like a mix of like LCD slash analog speedometer, which I kind of like the look of it. I do wish the LCD on it was a little more contrasty. It was a little hard to see.
Yeah, there was some moments it was a little difficult.
Yeah, so. Where I was just like, it's a little hard to see, like especially the like your revs, your RPMs.
Yeah.
It was a little hard to see that because it's like a very small little like graphic for that. Torque assist clutch. Basically, I mean, this is a lot of stuff you see on like higher end bikes, but it's this on a bike that's just over five. Well, grand.
and it is you know, it's Triumph. It's a Triumph branded bike, and you can get in on it for about like a little over $5,000.
Yeah, so. And it is built in India in partnership with Bajaj. Oh yeah. Bajaj, and I feel like especially like in India or parts of the world where smaller capacity bikes are like, you know, your only means of transportation, these are probably going to sell a ton.
Yeah.
And just talking to the folks over at the dealership here, they've been having so many orders come in for both the Speed 400 the Scrambler 400.
Yeah, they're going hot.
Yeah.
So.
And then riding it, like, I thought it was a fun little bike to ride. Okay. Granted, it was a very windy day, and I did try to ride it on the highway with headwind. That was probably a little bit more than that bike could... Chew the little
engine.
It was
a really windy day.
Yeah. But overall, like, I didn't think it was that bad. Like, it was just peppy enough that you can still kind of, like, have a little bit of fun with it. But, you know, just especially to get around town or do, like, small little rides and stuff. Yeah. I thought it was great. I was really surprised with how comfortable it was. For such a small bike, I was like, okay, I actually feel like, you know, I'm comfortably sitting on this as opposed to when we demoed the Trident last year. I remember feeling like the Trident was very cramped up. Like it was really kind of tucked up on it.
Yeah.
While on this one, it was like a very nice, neutral, relaxed seating position.
Yeah. That was actually what I was going to ask. Like, what did you think of it comfort wise? Because it did feel more open than the Trident. You're not as tucked in on the Trident.
Yeah.
And me personally, I was actually very surprised by how peppy it actually was. Like, you pull on that throttle and that little single cylinder engine
It just gets going. And I was also pretty surprised by that. I didn't expect it to.
And it was so light.
Yeah. To do that out of like a small, kind of like a small displacement engine.
Yeah.
But no, it was a nice little. It was a nice little machine. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I think my real complaint is that LCD. I just wish it was a little brighter, had more contrast.
Yeah.
I also felt like the build quality, just from just looking at it and like, you know, tapping some parts here and there, like it feels like it's a pretty solidly built bike.
Yeah. And I was really impressed with it overall for like, you know, I guess I wasn't worried that it was going to be like this like cheaply built budget thing. I wasn't like, I know Triumph's not going to spit anything out with that for their name, you know, but it was like, I was very impressed for how well everything was kind of put together, how it felt.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. The little screen thing. Sure. But like, even like the dial though for the speedometer was like pretty responsive, and you could see like how fast you were going, and
I thought it like worked really well on that, and I didn't think it was like, honestly, for like if I was buying a first bike right now, if I had no prior riding knowledge, that would be a very big contender for a bike I would look at.
For the price and the package or the package for the price, right? Yep,
yeah, exactly.
And I think for that one, it was very, I think it'd be a perfect bike, even like just for getting around, like if you're in like an urban area or city or somewhere.
100%.
Like, where you don't have to go very fast or you don't have to go very far. I think that'd be a great little city bike for if you're in the US. Obviously, around the world where smaller placement bikes are going to be a little bit more necessary or more common, I guess I should say.
I do agree with that.
I liked it though.
Like it was, and it looks good.
Yeah. And it sounds good.
It sounds good. And it looks good. It looks, it's part of Triumph's, modern classic line. Mm-hmm. So it does have all the similar touches, kind of like they're basically their Bonneville and stuff.
Baby,
too.
Baby Bonneville.
Basically baby Bonneville and stuff.
Yeah.
We did not get a chance to try out the Scrambler 400 because they, pretty much just as soon as they get one, it's gone.
Yeah.
And they don't have any demos available that they can let us use. So I would like to try that sometime in the future, but
I did sit on one the last time we were there before before the ride demo day and everything. But it was, so I sat on it and like it feels good because you're up a little higher.
Yeah.
You know, so you have those bigger wheels.
Yeah.
And so I think I would like that one too. I would be curious because it is going to be a little heavier.
That's true.
So I'm curious how it would feel from there. But
and the cool thing about the Scrambler is that it has an off-road mode as well.
It kind of I didn't know that. That's cool. Oh, yeah.
It dulls out the traction control and the ABS. Oh, so you can kind of like, you know, whip the back wheel around a little bit more, which I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah. The fact that would be a strong contender for a first bike for me. If I
should we move on to our next one?
I think so.
Before we move on to the Pinigali, I forgot to mention that I also rode the BMW.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. The BMW S1000 XR. So that was when you went out on the Speed 400. I just happened to notice a demo sticker on one of their bikes outside. And I was like, oh, wait a minute.
Can I try this?
Can I try that? And they were very nice about it and let me try it out. The S1000 XR BMW is not a bike that I typically or have ever ridden. It's not even the type of bike that I've ever ridden because it is basically BMW sports tour. So competes kind of like sort of in the way with like the Multistrada and stuff like that.
No more road focused one.
Yeah, very road focused. 17 inch wheels front and back. So
very
very sporty, honestly. It was a really good bike.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It was one that was really comfortable. The seat was, it wasn't like an adventure bike style seat where it's kind of longer.
Yeah.
It was just like, just enough for my ass to perfectly fit on it.
An ass scoop.
Yeah. So it was a really nice and comfortable seat. And it had a pretty like, just your average commanding upright seating position.
Yeah.
But it was pretty fair. It had a decent enough windscreen. So it was like a nice cocoon of air, especially on that windy day.
Okay.
And once you open that thing up, though, it goes.
Yeah.
It goes pretty quick. It's a very peppy and responsive bike, and I really like that. And it does have that BMW's crispy, very nice-looking TFT screen.
Yep. You are a big fan of how they do that.
Like, I can't not talk about if I'm on a BMW because of how good that screen is. Super easy to see, super clear. Had a quick shifter that worked really, really well. It does not have the boxer engine. So it's a 999cc engine, but it does have a 165 horsepower power.
Okay. Is that a four cylinder?
It's a two cylinder. No, it is a four cylinder. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Four stroke, inline four. So it's an inline four. And 165 horsepower, 84 pound feet of torque. And you feel it. Like it's a pretty quick bike, and it was very responsive when you get it going. It's got a chain drive. I mentioned quick shifter. It's got different riding modes and stuff like that. All the usual stuff you'd see from a bike that's, you know, $18,000 or so.
Wow.
And if I wanted to have like a road bike for touring.
Yeah.
Not like off-roading or anything like that, just straight road touring that can feel like it still can handle like taking corners and things like that or twisties up at like a higher speed, this probably would not be a bad bike to do so. Okay. I don't know if it would be like the one I would get because it's the only bike in that category that I've tried.
Yeah.
But
for a sport tour,
it's definitely one that I would consider if I ever wanted a sports tour just because of how good it felt to to sit on it and ride on it.
Yeah, I'm curious. I haven't looked into a sport tour category a lot, really, at all. Mm-hmm. What other sport tour?
You know, that
sport
is
tours are out there, because I don't think Triumph has one. The closest they'd have is their Tiger GT.
I think it would compete with the GT. I feel like at least it might even compete with the 1200 because it's up there in power.
Yeah,
even though it's not a, I mean, it's just 1,000
CC, right?
Yeah, it's 999, so 1,000 CC engine. But it's not like, but it has 165 horsepower. That's
decent.
Yeah, that's pretty much almost the same as the Tiger GT, 1200 GT. I think it would definitely compete with the Multistrada.
Yeah,
I believe, especially like the Pikes Peak Edition or kind of like those more road bias ones.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty remember,
because the only other like sport tours I can think of are like the Yamahas and
the Yamaha Tracer has one.
Ducati has their Super Sport. It's more of a sporty bike, but it's kind of like I don't know if it's sport tour, but it's bigger than a sport bike.
Okay.
So
Just like a quick Google search that's popping up here. There's like the KTM 1290 Super Duke.
Okay.
The Super Dukey, the Ninja 1000 XR SX from Kawasaki, the Honda NT 1100. That's actually, Honda's sports touring bike.
Okay. So I learned something today.
Yeah. So there's quite a few. The Multistrada V2, that's another one, but I think this is probably a class above that.
Yeah.
Just because of its...
as an assumption.
Yeah. Assume. Yeah. It's kind of higher spec bike.
Good to know.
There's BMW's own, even R1250 RS, which is like their boxer engine sports tour.
I think I need to try one of those.
The Ducati Super Sport that you mentioned. So, there's lots of different options and things like that. And like I said, I haven't tried really any bikes in this category, so I don't know how it compares. It's
another category for us to try out, I think. So
I don't know how it compares to like other bikes in the category, but I feel like from my limited experience riding on this thing, I really enjoyed it, mainly for the more like the comfort aspect of it. It was a very comfortable bike to ride.
Good to know.
And it was peppy. It was a fast boy.
I'll have to try it next time, I think. So,
yeah, definitely.
So you liked it.
I enjoyed it.
Okay. Yeah. You would recommend it for someone to try?
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely try it. I mean, I recommend trying any bike you can get your hands on.
Yeah.
Just to see what you like. But no, I did like it. I don't know if it would be the category that I would like really be interested in buying, because I kind of like the adventure, more adventure style bikes. But it's definitely a bike that I did like riding.
Okay.
But not as much as I like riding.
Let's get to the big one.
The big one. The $32,000 Panigale V4S in the beautiful red color. And it had that like clutch window that they have.
Oh.
This is, in my opinion, one of the most beautiful bikes out of any bike in production currently on the market.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. It's an absolutely gorgeous bike, especially in that red color. I love how it looks from the front. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's like a shark.
Yeah.
Like it's just ready to like jump at you.
Like it looks mean and aggressive, but sleek at the same time.
Yeah.
Like it's just a very,
looks very Italian.
Yeah. It's a Ferrari.
It's
on
a Ferrari
wheels.
Of motorcycles. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember like getting on that bike. One, first thing I noticed, not a very comfortable bike.
Oh no. It's not supposed to be.
And it's not supposed to be. And if you're trying to be comfortable on a bike like this, it's not the right bike for that. But I feel like it might be easier if you're like a shorter person, probably just to kind of sit on top of it. But
Because I felt the same way, actually, because I'm being 6 foot, I'm lanky and long legs, and I just felt like I was just like really just balled up sitting on top of this thing.
I feel like I had like my shoulders are like pushed back, and I was just really like scrunched up on there, just because it's a very aggressive seating position on it.
I'll let you talk about it first, because for me, when I talk about it, this is like my first sport bike I've ever ridden, period.
Pretty much same. The only other sport bike we've ridden, I think it was that little CF Moto.
Yeah, and I didn't even ride that one.
Oh, then that was just me.
Yeah.
We're not even going to compare it to the CF Moto, because this is a whole different class of bike and that's not worthy of comparison. But yeah, so I got on it and I was like, okay, this is going to be a little bit of getting used to. Then you start it up, you get it going. It has this, like, this is a bike, and the guy at the dealership even told us, like, this is a bike that likes to be ridden fast. Mm-hmm. And it's noticeable because it feels the smoothest at higher RPMs.
Well, and he said it's demanding, but yeah, it rewards you once once you get it to where it wants to be.
Yeah. And I really like how you mentioned that it's not a hard bike to ride, but it's a demanding bike to ride.
Yeah.
This is not a bike that you like just have for riding around town, taking a stroll to the coffee shop and things like that. This is a bike that wants to be ridden fast.
Yep.
Like, this is a bike that you probably be really missing out on if you never take it to the track, because it's a bike that I feel like could only live up to its true potential.
Yeah. Well, it's meant
a track. Yeah. Yeah. It's meant for that. And, but yeah, like, just opening it up when we got on that road that goes out of the dealership, I was just like, yo, this is a fast, fast boy.
Yeah.
This is a very fast bike. It's got a lot of power. 181 horsepower?
For the 87? Horsepower, it's up there. This is showing in Newton meters for the torque. Let's see here. Oh, there were 210 horsepower.
210 horsepower.
At 12,500 RPM. Yeah.
At a bike that weighs just over 400 pounds, like 420 pounds, 412 pounds.
It's not a lot.
And it just, you just feel that amount of power. And it was a little damp that day. It was a little like, it started sprinkling while I was on the ride. So I was a little too nervous to like fully rein it out, like fully get the power. Power going on it, because it was like, okay, this is one, a very expensive bike, and two, it's on very slick looking tires and it's not mine, and it's starting to rain a little bit. So I was like, okay, we're gonna be a little bit careful on this.
Yeah,
but you can just feel like I didn't even use like a fraction of the power that it delivers, like whatever speed I was going, and it was a very quick legal speed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, very legal speed. And I could feel like, oh, this isn't even using like a fraction of what this engine can do.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot more that it can do here that I cannot do here for my own like safety and sanity.
Yeah. And like, and again, when I tried it, you know, like I wanted to like kind of see if I could push it even a little bit legally.
Yeah.
You know? And so I
legally,
And so going, so I, you know, you kind of get it going a bit there, and like, you're kind of, okay, this is getting intense. Like, I haven't ridden anything like this before.
No.
And you can just see that bike just doesn't care.
It doesn't care. Like, it's like, oh, it dude, you're not even touching.
Yeah.
Like, you're not even in the upper power band yet. You haven't even hit the peak of the power band, because I don't think that's even possible to do
on a city road. Yeah.
Yeah. On a regular road. You either have to get either a really rural straight road, or probably better
just go to a track. Be safe.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can do it in a safe environment. But man, that thing was just absolutely intense.
It wasn't
I remember my wrist started hurting about like 15-20 minutes into the ride, just because I feel like all the pressure is just on the wrist.
Like, it makes you like, it's very aggressive, so you're kind of putting a lot of your weight on
you.
Your
really
wrists.
Gotta like scoot your ass back and like as far back into the seat as I'll go, so you can really tuck in there. And it's got riding modes. It's got rain, road, sport.
Does that have a track mode?
It has has like race mode.
Yeah.
Race A and then race B. So you can like tweak it to how you want it to be.
Yeah. For me, again, this being my first sport bike, which I think is kind of silly that my first sport bike I tried was like the top of the line, like production one. But man, what I noticed too is like, it's a very, obviously it's fast and aggressive, right? And like and that exhaust note and the throttle, it all just
the
feels.
The exhaust note is just amazing. Yeah,
like it just feels alive and roaring to go. But then like, even when you're just like kind of just getting through town like we were, it's very smooth too. Like, it's a very smooth engine.
Yeah.
But somehow at the same time, has a lot of character.
It has so much character.
I was blown away.
Yeah. And it just has, I really like the note that it has. It almost feels like, you know, it's a very high tech engine, but it doesn't feel like it's and sound like it's like super high tech. It just has this like very peculiar exhaust note where you know that it's like this just raw power coming out of this thing, and just absolutely
I want absolutely one intense. But then realistically it's like, well, like I would have to take it to the I'd have to be able to take it to the track, and I haven't I'm not financially prepared to get into the track as a hobby yet.
So. That, and that's $32,000
financially ready for that hobby.
Had electronic suspension, and you can actually feel like the active dampening stuff working. If you put it in sport mode, you can feel like really stiffen up on you and like tighten down. All the good stuff. Had a great TFT, the standard Ducati TFT, way better than Triumph's TFT. Yeah. Not as good as BMW's in my opinion.
You know, though, now I've tried that one where we've tried the Panigale V4S. I think I hope one day we can try the Speed Triple RR.
Yeah, the Speed Triple RR would be awesome. Also, BMW is the S1000 RR. That's basically their, you know, like super or their
big thing,
big sports bike.
Yeah.
I would love to try one of those. I think the Panigale is probably even then is still like in a league of its own above at least the speed triple.
Oh yeah,
the speed RS triple. Just because the RS it still kind of has like more naked bike look. It's not like a fully fared bike, but
and that one I would like,
still like to try it.
The Speed Triple RR or the RS, because we've tried the RS, the Speed
we haven't tried the RS.
I'm talking about the big
1200.
Yeah, and I saw that they're making some updates. Oops, there's they have some updates. And I saw on that one the speed is that it's got like a, I forget the name for it, but like you can get off in first gear without using the clutch. So like if you let go of the clutch, the bike will just like crawl forward.
But but it's still not like a fully fared.
Oh, no.
The Panigale and stuff. The S1000RR from BMW is. And then, I mean, Japanese manufacturers, they have all sorts of different bikes in that category. Yeah. Like Kawasaki and their 20 Ninja models that they have.
Yeah.
And all of those. But I've never ridden any of those, so I don't know how they would compare it to the Panigale. But I can tell you they're not as beautiful as the Panigale.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, even I think like the R1 from Yamaha looks good. I would still try one. But But yeah, like the Ducati just kind of blows it out of the water for looks.
Such a good looking bike.
Yeah.
So. just everything about it, from the fairings, the color, that awesome clutch window, whatever it's called, the exhaust note, just everything about it felt awesome.
Well, and I get it now, like with the the Ducati, right? Is like, because even like the seat, it's very thin, it's very uncomfortable, but it's like it's well put together. It looks like it belongs on something like that. Like it was exactly. Gorgeous. It was all of it, you know? So
would you ever buy one?
You know, yes. If money wasn't, money's not a factor, I would buy pretty much any motorcycle.
That's true.
It's like one of those things like, man, I could see myself having some fun on there on that bike. But again, it would involve taking it to a track and being safe.
Yeah.
And
I think
it'd be way too, I know it's going to be way too easy to break the law accidentally.
Oh, on 100%. A bike like that. I mean, it's easy to do on our bikes already, pretty much on most bikes.
Yeah.
I think personally, like part of me says like, yeah, I would love to have something like this and stuff. Right. But realistically speaking, realistically, I can't afford it.
Yeah.
But if I could even afford it, not even like a money, no object type deal, but more of like, okay, I have that much enough spare money to get like a toy that's that expensive. I don't know if I would, just because I feel like I would never be able to use it to its full potential just out on the city road, on the city street.
Yeah.
I would much rather take something like the Street Triple from Triumph, the Street Triple RS, or maybe like the Panigale, maybe like the V2 or the Street Fighter V2 or something like that, even though it's less power, but then you can at least kind of like use more of it on like public roads without having to like take it to a track to unleash like even a half of its full potential.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, yes, it's cool, but I also don't know if it's something that I would get just because I know it will never get used to how it's like how it should be used.
And you know, and our friend Jeff has the V2.
Yeah.
And it's a nice bike, and even that, he's fast on that bike.
He's very fast. So it's not, even the V2 is not a slow bike by any measure. No. Like, and same with like the Street Fighter V2, and
boy, it was fun.
Oh my god, it was such a fun machine to ride. Mm. Like,
what a treat!
It's hard to put into words what it felt like to ride on that thing. Yeah. But it was pretty damn awesome.
Yeah. So if you're in the Salt Lake area, Eurosports Utah, they're the ones who like. They held their, well, Ducati has like their demo day, but yeah. Obviously they deal in the Ducatis, and all us being able to ride these bikes, it was thanks to them. They don't have to be this cool, and they are, so yeah. they're amazing.
It was a very awesome experience and opportunity to ride the Panigale, not just the V4, but the V4S. Mm-hmm. So the more expensive model.
I'm still getting goosebumps just remembering it. Like,
so. The more expensive model of an already expensive bike.
Yeah.
And that's not even as expensive as they get. No, they had one out that you could not demo for obvious reason, but it was like a $50,000 bike, but it was like purely like a race and track focused machine. It was still street legal, but it did not have electronic suspension. It had, I think, even more power.
Yeah.
And it was just like even more like a pure machine, but it's like $40,000.
It was a lot. And
insane.
Yeah. And I think it's something like even like the one we rode to that super expensive one. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if like I had that kind of money to throw into a toy like that or a hobby, that's a lot of cash to be leaning into a corner at like a lot of miles per hour.
Yeah. So you got to be either a really good rider or hope or planning on becoming one to like fully utilize these machines. Fully use them to their potential.
And if you have one, I mean, props to you. Yes, that was cool.
So, send us pictures.
Yeah.
Tell us what it's like to ride that thing on the track.
Yeah, it was a bummer because I was hoping I could make a reel with like the video footage I got, but then my mic, because I had the mic in my pocket going from the GoPro.
That's right, yeah.
And it kind of came loose, so the audio for the exhaust is useless.
Yeah.
But I have the video, so maybe we'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Should we move on to our main topic?
Yeah, I think we've gone on a bit now. So
just as a reminder, our main topic today is kind of bringing your bike out of winter. Here in Utah, we're slowly coming out of winter.
Painfully.
And we have gone on like a decent like a day ride already.
Yeah.
With our friend Emerson, who just got his new KTM. We went out into the desert adventure. And rode around there and stuff. But after your bike's been sitting for a while, all winter, I mean, I took mine out like maybe once when we had like kind of a semi like warm-ish clear day, like back in January. I took it out for just a quick ride around town to get some coffee, but it wasn't like anything extensive. But after sitting for a while, there's also always things you should look out for and check on the bike, because it is a machine that you are responsible for, and if it's something bad, that's
it's already expensive, guys.
It's already expensive, but it can also make it compromise a lot of like the safety and performance of the bike. It's not a car, like it's got two wheels, and you can lose balance and fall off and crash much easier than you can in a car. So it's something to like take care of before you do any extensive riding as you're coming out of winter.
For me, like, cause last year, I think I rode like maybe once or twice, like last winter. Mm-hmm. But this winter I didn't touch my bike at all.
Really?
Where it was being stored somewhere else. That's true. I had it plugged in. So it was just sat on the battery tender with a full tank of gas, and I had it on the center stand.
Yeah.
And that's all I did to taking care of it.
Yeah. That was like that one time was the only time I'd taken it out. And, But now that riding season's coming in, that's why I'm trying to, like, I already did an oil change on my bike. Mm. I kind of just make sure to check all the hoses, the brakes, lights, and everything that works. And that's kind of, the checklist.
Oh, when we went on our first ride, like with the guys, you had like that gunk built up.
Yeah. So I realized I should clean my front sprocket, something that I haven't thought of. But I had a bunch of like just gunk and dirt and stuff built up behind it, and just ended up cleaning like all over like the back mm-hmm. wheel and the back of my bike. There was a lot back there. I opened that up and they spent like an hour scrubbing it out.
Yeah, I gotta and do that.
I never even thought of that, of doing something like that, but yeah.
Yep.
But anyways, if you are bringing it out, like if you recall back to the MSF course, mm-hmm. they teach you about T-clocks, where I don't remember what it stands for.
Tires, clocks. Nah, so, I can't remember exactly, but it's tires, C-word, liquids, I believe, or lights. Might be lights. Wow, we're bad writers.
We're very bad. I'm going to look it up while you're trying to explain it.
while he's looking that up, the gist of it is that you're making sure the bike is in riding condition, that you're not seeing any fluids running or any like streaking.
Got it.
You got it? Okay.
T, tires and wheels. So tires, check the tread depth, wear, weathering, any kind of like rot.
Yeah.
Especially if your tires are older or any flat spots, check the tire pressure. The wheels, if you have spokes, check for any bent spokes, anything that's out of line. If it's cracked or cast aluminum or cast mm-hmm. wheels, check for cracks and dents. Same with the rims, bearings, make sure the wheels kind of spin freely and good. And then also the brakes, make sure that your brake pads are still there. Make sure that the brake levers are actually stopping them. Everything like that.
If I remember right from the MSF, like part of controls with like checking your levers and everything, like make sure your throttle moves all the way and then you can like move your
and make sure the throttle doesn't stick.
Yeah.
If you're moving it down. So the C is for controls. So check your handlebars, make sure they're aligned.
Yep.
Levers and pedals are all working. Cables are all in good condition. Nothing's loose. Make sure they're not rotting either or have any like tears or holes in them. Same with the hoses. The L is for lights and electric. So check battery. Hopefully you had it tendered tender throughout the winter, so hopefully it's not dead. Headlamp, tail lights, turn signals, switches, mirrors, all that stuff. O is for oil and other fluids. So check the oil level, and I typically change mine in spring as well before kind of riding season comes in. Because I mean, my oil change interval, or it's like 6,000 miles or 1 year, whichever comes first. So I just prefer to change it.
That's same with my bike. It's like 10,000. So mine's, I changed it sometime during last season. So I'll probably just go ahead and just whatever.
Yeah.
Just
get it ready. If you can't remember when you change it, just change it.
Yeah.
It's an oil change. It's really easy to do on most bikes.
Yeah.
And, you know, your engine, I mean, it won't hurt having new oil in it regardless.
Yeah, just your wallet.
And time. And also, if you're changing your oil, make sure you take the gasket from the oil filter out of the engine.
Why do you say that, Gleb?
Just make sure it comes out with the old oil filter. Make sure the gasket comes out too. So when you put the new oil filter on and think you tightened it up, made it all right, oil doesn't go gushing out of your motorcycle all over your garage.
He took oil painting way too seriously.
Painted my entire garage floor with oil, which was not a fun experience. And it completely messed up because I was very precise on how much oil I measured out when filling up my bike. Yeah. And then I didn't know how much spilled out. It took me like an hour to scrub everything like clean in there. So if you are changing your oil yourself, make sure you check for the old gasket to make sure that came out with your oil filter, because otherwise you're going to have a bad time.
That sounds like a bad time. I'm sorry that happened.
It's a learning experience. Now I will know.
Yep.
So I should just actually make a checklist so I can always just.
Well, and you had changed your oil before on your own, right?
Yeah, I changed it last year and I remember to do that. So it was just one of those things that I kind of overlooked or forgot.
Well, for me, I think it's, I think that's just like a good point of, you know, you're coming into a new riding season. So, you know, getting your bike ready to go, that it's safe to ride mm-hmm. is, you know, the first step. But then like you're getting it out, go do some slow speed maneuvers, go practice again, because it's like, you know, you've changed oil before and it was just a silly little thing, a gasket. And, you know, imagine something like along that logic while you're riding, you're not as good at your emergency maneuvers. You know, so
I think that's actually a really good point.
So I think that, like, that's just another thing that once you're done with your T-clocks, you get on the bike, everything's good.
take it slow.
Just ease into it, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
They'll go like balls out, especially if it's like, it's still springtime. You gotta remember, like, it still can be a little chilly outside. The roads are still colder. Your tires are most likely take a little longer to warm up. And if tires are, you know, if they're colder, they, they don't have as good of traction and stuff. So that's actually, very good point to kind of ease into it.
And I know I've mentioned that in a previous episode where we were talking about getting back into riding again. After a winter. So, but yeah, I just think it was, I would be curious. I'm wondering if I said this last time we talked, as we had this topic, I'm wondering like for the rate of motorcycle accidents, if they kind of spike.
That's a good
for
question.
The whole
that's,
year.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Let's, like at the beginning. Maybe for like the next episode, since we're talking about safety ratings, that's actually a good statistic to kind of look into.
Check that out. So,
but yeah, back to T-clocks. So oil and other fluids, check your oil level, brake fluid, coolant, any other fluids your bike may have.
Your chain,
make sure that's clean and oiled up. And then the C is for your chassis. Check your frame. Make sure it's all in good order. No cracks or loose things hanging off of it. Suspension, make sure that there's actually travel, no fork leaks and things like that.
Yeah.
Chain and belt, and then any kind of fasteners. If you have any accessories that you've added onto the bike, make sure the bolts are still, you know, they're on good. There and not, you know, loose. And then S is for just the stands. Make sure your center stand is, or make sure your side stand is actually, you know, able to freely, like, just sit up against the bike. Make sure it's not, like, just dangling, flopping back and down. And if you have a center stand, kind of the same thing, which I actually feel like the center stand probably won't apply to a lot of bikes unless, like, it's an adventure bike.
Yeah, well, we put our center stands on, and that's actually something I never thought about. I should probably check that. I'm sure it's fine.
I know, like, I mean, when I had to install mine, it asked for it to put like a little grease, in like the tube that goes, like where it goes through the frame or whatever, to put like grease up there. And I think even in the manual, it says to like check that periodically and grease it up. But there's no way in hell am I taking that thing off for maintenance, because putting it on will be a huge pain in the ass, and I am not going through that again.
Public rider service announcement: putting on your own center stand, that big massive spring, it sucks. It's probably like one of the least favorite things I've done with motorcycling.
Yeah. It took literally every step up to that. Easy. Piece of cake.
Like, oh yeah.
Just putting that spring on took two fully grown adult men to figure out how to get the damn thing off. And we broke like two things in the process. Thankfully, none of them were our fingers or hands.
We broke the spring tool, the tool meant to put on a spring. We broke that.
But it's also the tool that got the spring on, just being used differently.
We used it broke. It took it to break to work.
Yep. It was a task failed successfully deal. But but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. So
but yeah, T-clocks, go through those if you are bringing your bike out of winter. And like Mitch mentioned, just in general, take it slow, practice your slow speed maneuvers, emergency braking, make sure your bike actually feels good.
I don't know about anybody else or you, but like every riding season when I get back on my bike and I try to do my slow speed stuff, I'm terrible at it.
I feel like I need a lot of practice, especially like doing the counter leaning and things like that.
Yeah.
I got to really, really pay attention and constantly remind myself to keep it, to look where I want to go.
Yeah.
I have a really bad habit of like looking down at the ground in front of me, and I need to not
see for me. It's that. And then also like giving like a counter weight, like pushing, like, you know, pushing on like the outside peg.
Yeah.
And you're going through. It's like, okay, come on, like get your butt off the seat and give it that counter.
Yep.
Cause a part of me just really wants to like be as good as I was the year prior. It's like, let me just throw this bike into a slow speed to figure eight. And then like, I try it and it's like, I'm going to drop my bike if I don't.
It's like almost you got to like retrain your muscle memory a little bit back. I notice that when I go snowboarding a lot too, I'm looking at the ground. I have to constantly remind myself, like, I got to look where I want to go, not where I'm currently at.
Yeah. And I actually just remembered, when I took my bike out last week, I think, or the week before last, just to ride around after work, because it was a nice day. And I decided I should try my ABS. So I just thought of that to be that's another thing you should check is like do your ABS check.
That's a very good point.
Make sure everything's good there.
Yeah.
It's part of doing your brake. Like this is just check your brakes. This is, but T-clocks is while you're stationary. So
yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Test out your braking and make
braking sure. Braking and yeah. Make sure the engine and the throttle sound normal.
Yep.
There's no weird knocking or clacking or
no white smoke.
Clicking the white smoke. When you're changing the oil, also check the condition of your oil.
Yeah.
You want it to, I mean, it's going to be dark brown near black, dirty. Like regardless, it's going to be dirty, but it shouldn't be like milky colored. It shouldn't look like chocolate milk.
Yeah.
If it looks like chocolate milk, that's bad.
Yep. And if it's shiny, if you got little metal bits in there, that's also pretty bad.
Yeah. So it should be just like dark.
Yeah.
Dark like this coffee mug. Mm. Not maybe not this dark, but
yeah, I don't know. So mine was pretty dark.
If it looks like my coffee with whole milk in it, then that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
So yeah, check the condition of your oil. Check the make sure your coolant is at a normal level.
Yep.
Check for any like wet spots below the bike. Sometimes a wet spot can appear from just condensation. You know, there's lots of little nooks and crannies in the frame. And if you're first starting it up, there might be just some like moisture, not from the engine, but right, just ambient air, like moisture and stuff. And as the bike warms up, there might be something, you know, dripping.
It'll just evaporate.
Evaporating or just, you know, condensing and stuff like that. If it's, you know, if you see something drip down, feel it.
Just make sure. Yeah.
Yeah. If it feels like water, you're probably fine.
And I think it was the second year I owned my bike. It was right breaking into riding season, took it out for a spin. Everything was fine. You know, I checked it beforehand and I get off, to get gas. And then I notice a puddle underneath my bike. So obviously I'm a little freaked out, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
So I get my gas, I move my bike over. And then looking at it, it's like, I instantly could tell it was coolant. So I was really worried there. But it was actually what happened. I don't know like what caused it exactly, but, there's an overflow.
Little two hoses there.
Yeah. So something in getting it going out of into riding season, you know, de-winterizing my bike, I guess, like just sitting there, something caused it. It decided to spit out some coolant.
Interesting.
But I checked the levels. I don't know if I overfilled it or something, Yeah. So that you know, if you're new to riding and this is your first time getting it out of winter, you know, just don't panic if something is wrong either.
Yeah.
Looks wrong. It could be something minute.
Yeah.
Like that. So,
and also if you have just a little bit of white smoke,
it's
coming out of your exhaust. Yeah. It's most likely, I mean, if it's plumes of white smoke, that's not a good sign. But if it's just like a little bit here and there as you start the bike, as it's warming up,
once it warms up,
it's most likely just some condensation in like the exhaust, especially where kind of angles.
It freaks me out every time.
Too, I know, still. Same here. I'm just like, is this supposed to be smoking that much? And it's just like a little puff. It's not even like that much smoke. And I'm like, is it okay? And then it goes away as soon as you start riding. It's not even.
Yeah.
Once the bike it's not even perceptible just because it's warm enough and the water is evaporated.
Yeah. So don't have a meltdown as you're dewinterizing your bike. You're waking this thing up from hibernation. So
pretty much.
Just take care of it.
Take care of it. And, take it easy.
Yep.
Take it easy. Don't go popping wheelies or trying to like carve corners and stuff right off the bat.
Yeah.
I think the other big thing is to watch out for, especially if you live in an area where it snows or rains a lot in the spring, watch out for road debris.
Yeah.
Because here in Utah, I mean, the roads look like shit right now. Not only from, you know, they always kind of get destroyed during winter regardless.
Yeah.
The snow, the cold, the ice and stuff, but also just like that snow and then followed by rain, the melting snow and stuff. It just washes so much like gravel and trash,
a lot of shit,
leaves, those clippings, the leaf clippings, just washes them all over the roads and stuff like that. I think that's kind of like another big thing to watch out for, coming out of
especially at runoff, like,
coming out of like winter and things like that, especially if you live more like towards a rural area and stuff. There's lots of stuff that like melts off from the snowpack and everything like that. There's washes on the road. Sometimes you'll even have you know, the roads are wet because snow is on one side of the road and it's melting and it's, well, you know,
yeah, and
going
even
across the road.
And even if it's dry, it's like if it's like washed onto the road and it dried, like then that's just less traction for you to ride over.
Yeah.
It's going to be dust, like, gravel,
leaves,
clibbins.
Yes. Clibbins. Just, oh my God, I keep knocking the camera out. Sorry if you're watching this on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. I just keep bumping the camera with my foot. Yeah, just watch out for like road debris and things like that. And I saw this on Reddit the other day. Somebody mentioned, and I thought it was a good point. The drivers might not be aware mm-hmm. of motorcyclists because, you know, most of winter, they're probably seeing maybe one or two crazy bikers out there in 30 degree temperatures. But for the most part, you know, there's not that many bikes out.
Yeah.
So coming out of winter, they might still not be like on a as big of a lookout for bikes.
They're more blind to you.
Yeah. I would say just stay more vigilant around other drivers and stuff and other people in general.
And if you're in Utah, the drivers get worse every year. So they're
it's true.
I hate it here.
Just kind of keep an eye out on the drivers and stuff. Just be aware that they are not as aware of you mm-hmm. as you are of them. Because they haven't really seen a motorcycle in a few months.
Yep. It's true. So,
anything else to add?
No, I think this is going to be a pretty light topic. We had a lot more to say about the bikes we rode.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it was worth mentioning for everyone.
It's a good reminder.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much all there is to it, you know, and
I think so. If you live in an area where it snows or becomes not rideable in the winter, let us know what your step process and procedure is for bringing your bike out of winter. And if you live in a place that you can ride year round, congratulations.
We still
hate
you.
Skip this episode.
Yeah.
If you don't want to watch it, it's fine. I don't care.
Yeah,
it's okay.
It's fine.
I'm just a little jealous.
Yeah. I'm going to go be sad now. That's pretty much all I think that's all we really have to say. If you guys are shopping for motorcycle gear, we are still RevZilla affiliates. You can find our link in the description below. It will support us, help us get more equipment.
Just all that stuff. And if you aren't shopping for new gear, but still want to support the podcast, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TDT motorcycles.
And thank you very much to those who have recently, or all of you who have donated, period. Really.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it. It's awesome of you.
It's pretty awesome.
So, I think
that's it.
That's everything. Yeah.
Should we get food?
Let's do it.
Yeah. Sweet.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We will see you in the next episode.